Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
You're on. And we're on.
All right. Good morning, Vachon, and good morning, Brown Briefly crew. Hey, it is Tuesday. It is September 15th, believe it or not, in the year 2020. That's an election year. The tweeting is still happening. It seems like you can never turn it off. But we also, of course, still have a global pandemic going on, and crazy crowds in the streets are screaming and still in panic. So, of course, I would say this wouldn't be progressive radio if I didn't remind you that today there are just 49 days left before the most important election of most of our lifetimes. And if you're not finding opportunities to contribute to the outcome that you would like to see in November, please email me, kevin@indivisiblevachon.org. Okay, after that self-serving announcement, I would like to say that today in the Jean Bosch studio, in the relative calm and security of downtown Vachon, we find mood-modulating synthesizer of voices from the virtual land of Zoom, complete with sound effects. Who needs autopilot airplane captain, champion Zoomologist, and steady-handed sound engineer Truman O'Brien?
Good morning.
And Truman, as our eyes and ears in downtown Vachon, are you seeing an indication that we're moving beyond our summer peak of visitors to the more tranquil existence we cherish, or is Vachon still experiencing peak bustle at this
well,
time?
Well, you know, I was downtown this weekend, and by golly, there were a lot of folks out still. I mean, I was surprised. But at the same time, of course now it's Tuesday, so it's quite a bit quieter. But,
nobody does anything on Tuesday.
No, but you know what? I think last Sunday was the, motorcycle Sunday, and there was about 10 bikes and that was it. So, I think
the Vintage Motorcycle Association.
Yeah. I think we're winding down, I think.
Well,
you know, they normally, I think, have like 300 to 500 bikes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we also heard there the voice of Susan McCabe, master of dialogue, political activist, part-time court observer, observer also of truth, arbiter of insight, and host of the important and discerning conversations we all really need to listen to on Real Talk. And curious, Susan, what are you bringing to our attention at noon today?
I am bringing a young woman named Melina White, who is the founder and blogger of something called the Seattle Conservative. She is a biracial, queer, conservative, libertarian, who's got a lot to say. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
All right. Fantastic. And let's see, also beaming in with another historic Zoom virtual background image, perhaps from a recent visit to another galaxy, is island historian, storyteller, international educator, and accomplished skipper Bruce Hallman, our stalwart guardian of the galaxy. And Bruce, you normally have a historic background behind you. You have a historic bookcase now.
It's a library. It's my dream library, right? We've all wanted to have this great sanctuary surrounded by books, so I can do it virtually. It's the only way I can do it. Our house is small.
All right. Well, I live with a librarian, so I'm very familiar with those kind of backdrops. Oh, hey, and let's see, always welcome sight on our Zoom screens and music to our ears is singer, thespian, philosopher, half a bubble shy of plum carpenter, Michael Shook, a.k.a. Chauncey Gardner. And Michael, are you worried that the news cycle is full of Trump said this, Biden said that? And how are you going to get your presidential campaign message through all that wasted blather to the masses who are hungry for your leadership?
This is a concern and has been. But I've realized at this date, at some moment, one has to allow reality to penetrate and So I'm, this is a momentous occasion here. I'm formally ending my presidential campaign. It's time to throw the full weight of all my investments and my people behind Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I think it's just the responsible thing to do. I fear I may have waited a little too long, actually. But there you are. And I'm more worried about, I'm not so concerned about Trump said this, Biden said that. I'm more worried about lunatics in the administration saying things like, if you carry guns, buy ammunition, ladies and gentlemen, because it's going to be hard to get.
Yeah.
Michael Caputo's going on to say, I don't be like being alone in Washington. Shadows on the ceiling in my apartment. There alone, shadows are so long. The man is, he's gone off his rocker and he's assistant DSHS. It's just like, somebody get him some help.
It's craziness, you know. Too bad the 25th Amendment doesn't apply to other people in the administration, I guess.
Well, you know, Trump fires people for a whole lot less. I'm wondering why he hasn't, of course, because this guy is speaking his language. He hasn't fired him, even though he's totally nuts.
Him, you know, he's still toeing the line and saying, well, Trump's done a great job.
Yeah, so I guess that's okay, no matter what your diagnosis.
Yes, you know, it's just more as days go by. We hope also to welcome having our Lynn Kerrigan as the smoke is sort of starting to clear. Her piercing vision will help us understand the activities of the day. But we don't see Lynn yet, but hopefully we'll have her join us.
We're working on it. We're working on it.
She's trying to get in, but she's having difficulty.
She's having problems with her computer, so we're trying to get her on the phone here. We're working on it.
Very good. Well, we'll hopefully return to that. And hey, let's see, just in case you forgot, me, editor in Indivisible, Vashon's weekly publication for your consideration and staying way too busy. Kevin Jones here, happy to report that this week I mailed 250 postcards to Iowa and Pennsylvania voters.
Huzzah, Kevin!
You know, you have to hold these cards sometimes because of the timing of what's going on in the States. But I went down to Burton and dropped the cards in, and it sounded like a brick hitting the bottom of the mailbox. So, yeah, it's a good feeling. And so, you know, other people are joining. We have over 50 people writing postcards now. So,
well,
hey, if people are interested, you can actually join our Indivisible Vashon monthly meeting, which is tomorrow at 7:00. Just go to indivisiblevashon.org, click on the events calendar, and register for the meeting. And we'll look forward to seeing you there on Zoom, just like we're on Zoom today.
By the way, and thank you for supporting the post office.
Yes, I was kind of dismayed to hear that your postcards dropped like a brick, meaning the mailbox must have been empty.
Exactly.
Well, it was early in the morning. Yeah.
So, okay.
My guess is they'd emptied it out. But yeah, you know, you go into the post office these days and it is hard to find postcard stamps. And we know that on November, well, as soon as we stop writing, which is going to be like mid-October, then all of a sudden Vashon will have an oversupply of postcard stamps. But for now, they're hard to find. So it's a good indicator. Hey, I can tell you, you know, the question on my mind this morning as I get up and look out through the haze of the trees is, think we should do something about the climate?
Yeah, what do you think we should do?
Take action?
Yeah. What kind of action can we take for the climate and for ourselves? Like, how do we get the rain to come? How do we get the winds to blow? That's kind of the immediate danger. What happens after that? Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm open to ideas, Susan. I think you're asking some really good questions. But just to set the stage here, there's almost 5 million acres are now on fire between California, Oregon, and Washington. And you know, the last year in 2019, 4.7 million acres burned across the entire country. So we're on track to set another record. And the peak wildfire season in California just starting. Of course, we're the worst in the globe air quality right now. The third worst city, apparently, as of yesterday anyway. And when I did go drop off my postcards in Burton, I couldn't see the south end of Vashon Island because of the smoke. So I don't know, what are people hearing about what's next?
Well, I mean, let's be realistic about it. There's nothing we can do about the situation right now. This is the new reality. You know, global climate change has reached a point where wildfires in the West, in Australia, are going to be an annual occurrence. You know, the ice caps from both north and south are crumbling on us. You know, I mean, there's predictions of up to a 10-foot sea level rise within the next 10 to 15 years if those things continue. So the question is not what we can do to change it, but what can we do to adapt to this and to prevent it from getting worse? So that's really the question. And I think that's the question that Donald Trump is dodging and Joe Biden is trying to address. It's going to take very serious action on a national level by nations all over the world to essentially curb emissions, to change our lifestyles. And that's not going to be easy. But, you know, wildfires in the West, we're going to see this for the rest of our lives. Wildfires in Australia, that I experienced last January, which was just like this, it's going to happen for the rest of my life. So thank goodness my life is fairly well long, so it's not too much longer. But but essentially, there's nothing we can do to change what we see now. What we need to do is focus on what we need to do to change, to make it, to keep it from getting worse.
Yeah, Truman, did you have a comment?
Sorry, I had my mic off. You struck on something really important, I think, and that is that even if we can't do anything about it, we at least need to plan for what we're going to do with the rising sea levels of these things. And the thing that gets me is that the Trump administration has shut down all of that planning for the military. And the military has, I mean, many, many, many of our bases are on the water, for crying out loud. I mean, if we don't plan for this, we're going to be underwater. Literally.
Well, I know that the Pentagon is generally, you know, not a branch of our governmental infrastructure that is prone to hysterical announcements. And the folks there, the planners there, the people who are responsible for looking at what you just said, Truman, are the you know, the viability of our systems to help us defend ourselves in a hostile world. And I still think we live in one. Those folks, those planners have been saying for a number of years now, they didn't just hit on this recently. They've been saying for a number of years, climate change is real. This is how it's going to affect things. And we've got to take action. Every week that we delay is a week lost. And then, so there's that. And then, as you said, Bruce, there's so many things that we could do right now. This is one of the things that is so frustrating to me. Instead of being in denial and staying there, we could be employing all kinds of people. I've said this week after week, building and installing solar panels. And it's not the answer to everything. We'd still need some backup for at night, but my goodness, we're wasting trillions of kilowatts of electrical power every day that could take move us away from coal and natural gas. It's very, very frustrating.
It is. And I don't think that's the only answer, but I think it is one of the answers. And I would like to see our military converted to an environmental Protection Army that is fighting climate crisis with things like building solar panels, building alternative energy sources, helping with agriculture to sequester carbon from the air, helping helping to convert mass agriculture to something more eco-friendly. That, and there are all kinds of scientific studies to show that organic and carbon sequestering farming can make a huge difference, and has already in some places. We just need to find a way to incentivize the corporations that are making money on destroying the planet, to incentivize them to turn that around. And that is a major cultural change, but it could also be a change in our taxing system. If we, instead of taxing or providing tax incentives to corporations for destroying the planet, let's provide tax incentives for eco-friendly operations.
That's a great you know, notion there, Susan, and really that's another crucial aspect of it. You know, make it worth people's while financially. I mean, look at there was Bruce. Did you talk about this? There was a picture of a one automobile. It was a 1904 St. Patrick's Day parade, or a big parade in New York City, and you looked at that picture, and there was one automobile, funky old thing, back in one corner, and then 10 years later, you had to find one horse in the parade. It was solid automobiles. If there's a financial incentive or some other kind of incentive there, people will make the shift.
I think that's Tony Seba put together a TED Talk, and I don't remember the name of it, but his last name is S-E-B-A, that I do remember. And I could probably do a quick search and find that TED Talk. It was awesome. That's about how quickly things can change if, you know, the market and technology is there for it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Kevin. All right. Well, hey, I'm glad that we've got our our listeners' thinking caps going. The wheels are turning in the gray matter, because here's an opportunity. Excuse me. On September 21st, 7 p.m., island organizers will know that already as the day that the Vashon Mori Island Community Council meets. And on that particular day, a representative from Puget Sound Energy, Heather Pierce, will visit Vashon. And one of the questions she's asking is, what can PSC do to help us out on Vashon Island? And I will just say that currently our utility, our beloved utility, Puget Sound Energy, does generate 56% of their electricity does come from carbon. And they also plan to sell off one of their coal plants. Now, you might remember that over 100 businesses and more than 700 Vashonians signed a petition to close those coal plants about 3 years ago, when we were communicating what was going on with our utility. So those are just a couple of things, but you can go out to the Vashon Mori Island Community Council website and sign up for the meeting, vmicc.net. So go ahead. It's a WebEx meeting, right? It's COVID safe. Show up, our utility, and let them know what we think. So I'm glad we've got that conversation started.
Do we know who is actually on the Vashon Mori Island Community Council at this point?
You know, I'm not certain, Susan, if they have completed their elections for the commissioners. So I would hesitate to say for sure.
Are they going to hold community-wide elections?
That's another great question. I would have to do that.
Clearly, they are not making their moves known.
Well, I can tell you that I know there are three people who are taking roles actively in the council right now. Diane Emerson is the one whose name I know, who the person that I know. And I don't know if they're just sort of caretakers at the moment between now and when they have the election, or if they already have the election and so on. But maybe Truman could do a quick Google search while
I'm doing that now.
I think I've talked to David Vogel, who was one of the people along with Diane instrumental in sort of raising this idea and sort of reinstituting the community council. And I think there in the council itself was always an open representative kind of thing, not always, but in the recent past before it disintegrated under a cloud of political sort of issues. But David and Diane's intent, I think, is to reconstitute the council and then confront those kind of questions and ask those kind of questions. Long ago in the 1950s and 60s, the council actually had community representatives representing areas of the island. At one point, it had representatives from community groups making up the council. And for the last maybe 15 years, 10 to 15 years or so, it was just an open forum with no sort of elected representatives. Anybody could show up and anybody could participate. So it's an interesting concept. Vashon is a place where we don't have a government. We've got King County, and we're an unincorporated area of King County. We're part of the state of Washington. We're part of the United States, but no decisions are made on Vashon, except for very local decisions. The cemetery
district. It's anarchy.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. But the airport district, the cemetery district, water districts, some local improvement districts, that kind of thing. Those are the only decisions about Vashon that are made on Vashon. All other decisions about Vashon are made either in Seattle by King County, made in Olympia by Washington State, or made in Washington, D.C. by the federal government. So we don't have any kind of voice for Vashon. And I think what David and Diane are interested in doing is recreating that voice. When the area councils were dissolved by King County, it left us voiceless. In essence, we don't even have a direct voice to King County anymore. So I think they want to step into that. And I think part of those conversations that will take place on the 21st in each monthly meeting is how to actually constitute the council to make it a voice for Vashon. So that's my sort of quick understanding.
As I recall from the last iteration, they were attempting to get a stronger voice within right. King County. And right. and I think they came upon across a couple of roadblocks. And can you fill us in on that at all? Or is that pertinent to this current discussion?
Well, yeah, in the sense that what King County had done is they had moved to create area councils
right,
in
right.
unincorporated areas of King County. And that was their attempt. That was the county's attempt to have a direct voice to the council from these unrepresented areas, if you will, or unincorporated areas. We certainly have a member of the King County Council, and we have representatives in the legislature. But essentially what happened is King County dissolved those area councils.
Right.
And that's when I think Diane and David sort of stepped in and said, hey, wait a minute, we don't have a voice anymore.
Right. So I'm looking on their website, and they're looking for 7 members. And right now they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 folks signed up. And if they get 8 that want to do this, then they'll have an election. If only 7 sign up, the 7 who sign up are
they're it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael, there's an opportunity.
Hey, yeah.
There you go, buddy.
Just today, you can segue.
You can move that campaign right over, man.
It's the White House or nothing for me.
I become the president of Vashon. You can be the president of Vashon.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, there's a. I've made a bid several times to be emperor of Maury Island.
Yeah.
So far, that has not worked out well. I'm surprised. I've told people, I'll be benevolent. Come on, you know, but
the torches and the pitchforks that surround your house give you an indication that they're not really interested in having an emperor, right?
That was, yes. They made a fairly strong statement there with that. And so
that is actually a perfect segue into the a republic, if you can keep it, department here, or a republic before we lose it department. And there's a couple of things, but I'd like to, Michael Caputo's crazed rantings over live Facebook Live just being one example. But I'd like to focus on people's thoughts about the government, Justice Department, trying to dismiss the former National Security Advisor to President Trump, namely General Michael Flynn, who, if you recall the details of the case, the Obama administration had just sanctioned Russia for meddling in the 2016 election. And Flynn is apparently, and pled guilty to, having talked to the Russians. And then about that, basically, we think saying, just let Trump get into office, it'll all be fine. And then he came back to America and lied about his conversations with the Russians and pled guilty to that twice. But the Justice Department under Bill Barr is saying that, no, you know, we should just dismiss the case because it's not real. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read just a few statements from Judge Gleason's commentary about the government's attempt to dismiss the request. So I'll do that, and then we'll get into some, what do we think about it? So Gleason says, to describe the government's motion to dismiss as irregular would be a study in understatement. In the United States, presidents do not orchestrate pressure campaigns to get the Justice Department to drop charges against defendants who have pleaded guilty twice before two different judges and whose guilt is obvious. Nor does the Justice Department, oops, sorry, I kind of lost my place here in the script. Let me go make sure to find it.
This is...
The hazards of keeping it paperless.
it's already setting up to be an amazing statement. Gleason goes on to say he's already demonstrated the government's stated reasons for seeking to dismiss are pretextual. The government does not even respond to most of Gleason's points. Instead, it ignores his argument and basically makes a second argument for denying the government's motion, which basically is a clear evidence of a corrupt and politically motivated decision. So what the judge is basically saying is that they're all in for protecting Trump's buddies. I'm just curious what people think about what's going on and any reactions to it.
Well, I repeat, how do they continually get away with this? Who's supposed to stop this corruption? Is it Congress, and why aren't they? Why doesn't Congress have any recourse for halting the Attorney General's support of corrupt support of Trump and his cronies? Who's got the leverage?
Well, in the American political system, there's three branches of government, and they have countervailing powers. So to rein in the executive, you have the legislature and you have the judicial branch. And what Kevin's talking about is the judicial branch. The courts are already trying to rein in the excesses of the administration. The difficulty with the legislative branch is that the legislative branch has to work in unison. You've got the House and the Senate together. Right now, you've got an impasse, and so the Congress has basically given up its oversight authority, and not on purpose, but because of the impasse. And that points to the importance of this election, not only on the presidential level, but on the Senate and House level, to turn the Senate, to turn the House, and to get responsible legislators in place who will use the authority of the Congress to rein in the executive is essential to maintain our democracy. If not, I mean, the courts are doing what they can do, but they can't do it alone without the Congress. And the Congress just sitting on his hands.
And a lot of those courts have judges that have been appointed during the Trump administration by him. So there aren't a lot of courts we can count on either.
Well, I disagree with that, Susan.
I mean, you
may have some Trump judges, but I mean, look at the Supreme Court. Supreme Court has come up with a number of decisions that have not favored Trump, even though he's got five of the justices. My sense is, and my observations is, when people become Supreme Court justices or become federal judges, it changes them. And what you're seeing, even from Trump, some of the Trump judges are reasonable legal sort of opinions. You may not agree with them, but they're logical, legal, argumented sort of decisions. And that's what you want from your judiciary. You want it to be, you want judges to have strong opinions, but you want them also to base those opinions in the logic of the law. And that's what I'm largely seeing coming out of the courts right now. And that's, the courts are the only bulwark right now because Congress has given up.
Well, but at the same time, Bruce, what about this stuff of Barr's? I mean, he is trying to go out and take out anybody that is investigating Trump or any of his stuff.
I mean, Barr can be removed by the Congress. Barr can be impeached.
Yeah.
Okay. But the Congress can't move right now. Congress is sitting on its hands because of the impasse. And that's why these congressional elections become almost as important as the presidential election.
Right. And by the way, Len has joined us.
Just say one other thing to Susan's point. The place that this is right in the process is that Judge Sullivan is the one who is the judge hearing the Flynn case and brought in Judge Gleason to evaluate, you know, whether he should dismiss the case or not. And this is the pushback that we are seeing right now. And for example, Gleason goes on to say that based entirely on evidence already in the public view, the only coherent explanation for the government's motion to dismiss the case, as well as its demonstrable pretexts, is that the Justice Department has yielded to a pressure campaign led by the president for his political associate, Michael Flynn. So I think we're seeing the pushback.
We're also seeing humans behaving badly. I guess that's an obvious point, but I think of how Bruce has said, brought up Lincoln's comment. You know, we appeal to the better angels of our nature, but humans are. Over the years, I've just come to think more and more that we are really keen on power, because if we feel like we have enough power, then we're going to be the ones that survive. And I look at the way that the senators just keep aiding and abetting this, either actively or by sitting passively on their hands and just not saying anything. And so through their their passivity, allowing things to continue to go forward like this. And I think they're playing a very dangerous game, I think, because what they're trying to do, I think, is say, well, we can ride this horse for another 4 years and get more of what we want. Now, whether they can keep that horse, you know,
alive.
and how well they can control that. That gets very dicey. That concerns me greatly.
Yeah. By the way, that was the voice of Lynn Kerrigan, whose smoke piercing vision, as well as her poet par excellence, relocated here, of course, from the land of magnolias. And Lynn, I hope you're ready to have Vashonites make you part of their day today on the Brown Briefly. How's it going?
I'm so sorry for. I've been trying to get online since 9:30, so something's going on with my computer that I suspect had to do with the last power outage, which drained my battery for about the 10th time. So that's what I suspect, because I was being timed out, I think, from entering the password. So that's all boring to people. So I've been catching up, listening to your conversation, and I want to say two quick things. One is that I was moved this week as things get tough to write write three very brief poems, and I want to read them because I couldn't find anything left brain logical and coherent that would do it for me, and it was the only thing that did. And so I'll come back to that in just one second. But what I wanted the second thing to say was my personal fears is that there has been some major coup, and only the courts, Bruce, I agree with you, are trying to keep some semblance of balance and rule of law. It feels to me like there's such obstreperousness within the Republican Party and the administration that we are very unlikely to change their minds. I don't know why. It just feels like a wall of silence and kind of a coup. And I kind of hope we can rely on the courts.
And just to interject here real quick, I agree with you, Lynn. We're not going to change their minds. I think the time, it's obvious, is long past for that. The Republican Party is dead as a functioning arm of the government or participant in the governance of the nation. It's solely about themselves and Trump. They have signed on. They punched their ticket to ride the Trump train as far as they can. And to me, that whole Republican brand is just it's a disaster. They're not looking out for the best interests of the nation. They are they've cast aside their oath of office completely, and they need to be thrown. It's not just Trump, it's Republicans.
I agree. And to that end, may I read you my very brief things, because it's the only thing I think that can capture my thoughts about this, and maybe something good will strike y'all in it. Don't feel like you have to reply, but three quick, very short poems. One, suicidal thoughts. Don't we all have them? I thought these thoughts were normal. How could they not be? Two, end days. Everything is happening so fast now. Our tangled webs releasing in the wind, the sudden collapse of our houses of silk, exposing an emptiness of spirit in want of substance, honor, glory, grace. And lastly, steady on. And though the seas rise, still we must turn together and seek higher ground.
Excellent.
That's what I have to say.
Thank you. You know, I had the privilege last Thursday of moderating an island panel on suicide prevention, which this is a complete departure from our conversation, but the gist of it is that the Vashon Be Prepared folks and the Medical Reserve Corps are beginning a campaign to prevent suicide here on the island. It's particularly good timing because we're heading into a winter of COVID shutdown, and winter's rough enough. So just check it out, folks. They're using a tool called LEARN. That's an acronym, LEARN. And you can check it out at vashonbeprepared.org.
Thank you.
Certainly a valuable service. You know, as Michael mentioned at the top of the show, the crazy comments that we're hearing from some who we are in control of some of the reins of our government. you know, obviously a hard-fought election, which is going to get, we should all be prepared that the rhetoric will turn worse than what we've seen so far and worse than happened in 2016. I know that I've been part of a conversation about the post-election day troublemaking that may very well occur. Our goal is to raise people's awareness of some of the things that could happen so that it's not a shock to our systems, and so that we can set, for example, when it comes to voting and, you know, count all the votes and wait to get all the votes counted, that in Washington State, we're in a really good position to say, you know, this system works, give it time that it needs, and patience is a virtue. So hopefully we'll hear more about those sorts of things. But yeah, it's challenging times we're heading into.
Hey, Kevin, to Susan's point, I wanted to give everybody again the phone number that is for our local community care team, part of the Medical Reserve Corps. That is a free mental health service on the island, supplementing island resources if they get overworked. We do have a team of mental health and spiritual care providers willing to talk to people for nothing. And it's a great resource. And the number is 206-701-0694.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you for that resource. All right. So, you know, one other thing that is going on, and we have just a couple of minutes to comment on it, but, right now, federal prosecutor Nora Danahy quit the Durham investigation, which apparently is looking into the origins of the investigation on Russia's involvement in the 2016 election. And I guess, Bruce, there's one question that I might have for you. We see these people leaving office, and some leave quietly. Others write books. We all hear about the Friday night massacre back in the Nixon administration. Are we immune from those things now? Do those departures have an effect? Will it all matter in the long haul? What do you think?
Oh yeah, I think it matters, because what you're seeing is the gutting of the American civil service. People leaving are not only those who are political appointments, but those who have been running agencies for long periods of time. And I think particularly looking at the Center for Disease Control, and the role of somebody like Dr. Fauci, he's under tremendous pressure right now to be ousted. And without people like that in place, we're in dire straits. And I think one of the things that the Biden administration, if they're elected, needs to do very, very quickly is rebuild that sort of American structure of civil servants who do the job of running the government. And it's sort of the Trump demonization of that deep state has been disastrous for us as a nation. And the COVID response is just one major indicator of that. So I think it's essentially important that those people be replaced and are brought back in. And I think it does matter in the long run. And that's the danger, if you will, of a second Trump administration, is the continual gutting of the American civil service and the American political system that sort of runs things on a daily basis. I mean, buses and schools and things like that, take people to run. And if you get rid of those people, those things begin to collapse. And we're seeing that right now.
The Guardian of the Galaxy speaks again. You'll have to live to fight another week.
That's right. That's right. And it's the institutional memory that we're talking about there. And hey, folks, we are out of time. Thanks a lot, everybody. It's as great
Thank
as always.
All.
Thanks for listening.
See you all next week.